We're heading to the Tairawhiti Gisborne area now. Farmers there are looking forward to having more boots on the ground in coming weeks to help clean up their farms still littered with forestry debris from recent storms. Now let's join RNZ rural reporter Maya Burry, who's with Regional Federated Farmers President Toby Williams on his 1,500 hectare sheep and beef farm.
Our family's been on this farm for about 130 years. We've been in the region for about 150. With the La Nina weather system we've had over the last 3 years, we've tended to get quite a lot of big heavy storms come through and isolated thunderstorms that have hit specifically north of Gisborne. Also south of Gisborne in March last year we had a big storm that tickled up the entire region and northern Wairoa as well. Heavy rainfall is not uncommon. We've got up and behind us is Te Aruwera's and Rokuma Ranges, which are used to big rainfalls. But it's been tough for farming. You know, we've had multiple floods. Some of my neighbours have had four floods in the last year where the fences have been taken out, floodgates, things like that, and it starts to grate on you after a while.
Yeah, can you talk about sort of the scale of some of the damage you've seen, especially with this latest flood with ex-cyclone hail?
Yeah, the latest one, if you say it doesn't seem to get any worse, but it seems to be worse. The areas that have been hit harder than the other storms. So March last year was a big storm called widespread damage, lots of slips and things like that. With this one, we've got record-breaking river levels. They've really come up high. Our own river came up across the road, through the bridge, which it did back in 2018 as well, in the Tolaga Bay floods. And it's just taking out fences, and we've got logging debris scattered through flat paddocks again now, which is really heartbreaking for farmers, because you can't put your re-fence, you can't do anything until that logging debris's picked up.
Has that debris been picked up yet? Or I mean, we're nearly, what, a month on from the flooding. How are things going with the recovery?
It's just, yeah, it's slow. It's been so wet. You know, I'm in my gumboots for the second month in a row when we should be in our work boots and a pair of shorts. It's really wet. You need heavy machinery to do this. Heavy machinery needs dry ground, otherwise you just make more of a mess. So the clean-up's underway. Farmers are doing what they can. You know, it'll be months and months and months, if not years, for some of this country to be fixed up, and you know, or if it's ever fixed.
Can you just talk to me about a bit more of the practicalities of what you actually do when you're trying to clear woody slash from your farm? Where does it all go? What do you do with it?
There's a couple of things you can do. The first thing, you need to pick it up. If it's on your flats, on the riverbanks, you need to pick it up and take it somewhere else. You can't leave it there because that's someone else's downstream's problem the next time it floods. So you need to get it higher than what the flood levels are, which sometimes is easier said than done. So you really need to be trucking it and then stacking it somewhere higher. And if you're lucky and it dries out, you can burn it. You can chip it, but it's, you know, there's a massive cost involved in that. And still, you've got to put it somewhere. It's good for your garden and things like that. I think the beaches have been chipping quite a lot and utilising it on community gardens and things like that, which is a great use for it, but you know, it'd be nice if it wasn't there. And I said, to be fair, the government wants to go into the bioeconomy, and we had a meeting with Minister Nash yesterday and said, well, why aren't we accelerating this program? Why aren't we looking at, when we're harvesting our trees, utilising the whole tree? We're not leaving anything in there to wash down. We're chipping it, and we've got microplants doing, you know, whether we're making wood pellets or we're converting coal-fired boilers and things like that. Everybody wants everybody to get rid of that. We can be using this wood we've already growing. And Tairawhiti in our region, we've got a lot of it. You know, we should be leading the front with this.
You talked about the big cost of sort of removing that slash. Who pays for that?
That's a really good question. In some cases, you may be able to get some insurance. Forestry companies will do some. They seem, you know, depending on how bad it is, they'll clear the main infrastructure. And in the past, it seems to have they've got bored of doing it. And they've gone back to doing their regular job, harvesting trees, you know, back to their day jobs. So often the cost falls back on individual farmers, and it's a cost, you know, you don't really want to keep bearing again and again and again. So the forestry companies do pick up some of the slack for it, and that's their equipment that comes in. You know, we'd like to see them in and doing it. There's tens of thousands of you know, tons of woody debris and thousands of hectares damaged from this. So the cleanup is going to be really long-winded.
Can you talk a bit about Enhanced Task Force Green and how that works and what support that will be providing?
Yeah, so Enhanced Task Force Green is run by the Ministry of Social Development, and effectively what you have is people who are work-ready, work-fit. They come in and they get guaranteed a certain amount of work. I think they're looking at this stage, it's 4 to 6 months worth of work for them. And what the guys do is really, if you've got stuff tangled up in your fences, they're pulling all that stuff out. You know, they're cleaning out wall sheds and any flooded buildings. It could be a person, someone's house, it could be a marae, it could be a community hall or a farmer's house. they'll clean the silt and debris, you know, get all that stuff clean and cleared out. And this, with this lot we've got going now, they're putting fences with them, so then these guys can start repairing fences as they go. So it's not just left up to the farm, then clear the straight off, then put it back. So they're doing a whole job at once, which is, and hopefully get these guys trained up, you know, and a few of these guys may transfer from being on the, under, you know, social welfare dependent to actually working and working on farms and things, which would be great. Priority is those guys that have lost roadside fences and boundaries, let's get them repaired, let's get them so their farms are stock proof so they can move forward. We're coming to a critical time of the year for sheep, and it's a mating season, so you want to be able to have a farm that's stock proof, and we don't want livestock on the roads and things like that either. So,
and could you just talk a bit about maybe the disruption to farmers' operations that is sort of occurring because of the damage?
The biggest probably effect has been on our roading network and the actual ability to get livestock in and out. The council's working, you know, pretty hard at trying to repair that, but it still hasn't stopped raining. You know, the roading contractors need dry weather to repair roads, so that's the biggest ongoing thing, is trying to get our roading network back up so we can get people to town. You know, kids are just going back to school now, we need to make sure they're safe and happy going. You know, it's not, you know, a 2-hour journey into your local school where it used to be an hour. Those are the big things that really affect farmers at the moment.
Do you worry about the morale of some of the farmers who have been impacted by this?
100%. The mental wellness side of things we're really, really concerned about. There's only so much you can do when you've lost your fence for the fourth time in 12 months. You know, you've spent $30,000 putting your crops in and refencing only for it to be gone again. One of my good neighbours, good friends and neighbour up the road here, you know, I tried to call him straight after the floods, wouldn't even pick up his phone. I talked to his wife and he said, oh, no, look, he's not in a good space. You know, it's just, you know, he's a guy who you wouldn't expect to be like that. But it just, it drags you down. And the lack of sunshine as well, you know, sunshine, the big, you know, vitamin D and big yellow up there, we haven't seen it. You know, they had a few days over Christmas, and like I said, I've been in my work boots once in January. Normally it's hot and sunny, you're worried about putting sunscreen on. I couldn't tell you the last time I had to put sunscreen on the farm. So the mental side of things, it's going to be long. We're going into winter, we're so wet now, we're really concerned that any storm now causes more damage, causes more disruption, and there's continuing cost pressures on farms, and for some farmers it's, you know, it's going to be too much for them. So we need to make sure we've got the safety net right at the top of that cliff. People and we're talking with our communities. We've got community events going to happen over the next month or so, making sure people are okay, making sure people are well, making sure they know the support there. You know, the Ministry of Social Development and the Rural Support Trust are there. You've got people you can talk to. There's the government's been great in terms of being able to spread your income if you've had severe damage and things like that. So support's there, but we need to make sure people grab hold of it.
Toby Williams, a farmer and Federated Farmers Rep for the Gisborne region, speaking there to Maya Burry. And Maya tells us the Task Force Green workers will be on the ground in a couple of weeks.